Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Sian Vanderberg. Sian blends her passion for developing people with practical coaching, learning facilitation, and fitness programs. As a business leader, she has practical management and leadership experience within a Fortune 500 organization. Working within the sales and marketing sector, running sales teams, and working with distributors, she has lived and worked across Europe and in North America. Since 2002, she has been running her own coaching and training practice, working with corporate and private customers in a variety of sectors. In 2012, she introduced the concept of physical fitness and nutrition advice into her coaching work to meet the needs of highly stressed business people, to enhance their well-being and improve their ability to sustain high levels of workplace stress. Sian has coached executives and managers at all levels in a variety of organisations, from entrepreneurs to corporate vice presidents in Europe and the US. She has delivered learning events in the US, UK, Eastern Europe, Iceland and Malta, and has run mentoring programmes in the UK and North America. In addition to supporting her own clients, Sian works as an associate coach and trainer with other organisations. Thank you, Sian, and welcome, and thank you so much for being willing to be interviewed. You said before we started you're an interview virgin. I love that phrase.
I am interview virgin. Morning, Katie. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and I can't believe, with your wealth of experience, that you're an interview virgin. So I feel hugely honoured and privileged to be the first person to interview you. So thank you very much for trusting me.
My pleasure. So, it's funny, you know, when you're reading out all that stuff about me, I'm thinking, who the hell is that?
That's you. I know. It's weird, isn't it? When I remember when I send bios off to people and I read that and I think, who's that person? Oh, yeah, that's me.
And you're thinking, should I put that?
And how did that happen? When did I do that then?
It's quite ironic, really, because I spent quite a lot of time talking to people about their personal brand and how they should do their elevator speeches and how they should talk about themselves.
Right.
And, you know, when it actually comes to applying it for yourself, you think, oh my goodness, perhaps I better do a bit of self-coaching.
I know. It's like Dr. Heal thyself, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Oh, what I find really fascinating is combining your corporate work with fitness and nutrition. How did that happen?
Oh dear, well, that's through a process of kind of iterations, really. I mean, we were talking just before the interview about redesigning yourself, and I think I'm probably on my, third or fourth career by now, I should think, if you really look at it. And I think, the whole thing around fitness was really about part of my own personal journey.
Right.
I was always very fit and sporty when I was much younger.
Okay.
And when I got into the whole corporate life and got busy doing the corporate stuff, you kind of lose sight of what's important sometimes in terms of your own health. And probably you remember when you met me, but I was significantly overweight, and I had a bit of a wake-up call. I watched a program one day about diabetes and how, you know, if you get diabetes you have to have things amputated, and I was thinking, oh my god,
wow,
you know, really, frankly, that is not where I want to be. I want to be fit and healthy when I'm older. So around about my 40th birthday, I suppose, I made a concerted effort to really start to do something with my own health. Plus, I was recognising, because at that time, it was kind of around the time I was thinking, I really should be thinking about, you know, my longer-term health. And also, I just started coaching full-time. And I thought, you know, you've got to be a role model for what you do. So I started my own journey. It took me a long time, had some ups and downs with it. I think it helps to have had that kind of thing, because it makes you more credible with people. And certainly with my female fitness clients, you know, they initially look at me and they go, oh, it's all right for you, you're slim. And I'll show them a photo of me, you know, 15 years ago. And they go, good God, who's that? And I'll go, yeah, that's me. And so for them, it's like, you know, okay, so she knows what I'm going through. And, you know, when they fall off the wagon and they have a cake or they don't show up, you know, they know I've been there, and it's much easier for them to be able to relate to that. And the other thing I observed while I was coaching, particularly the guys at senior levels, there's a lot of them that drink, there's a lot of them that smoke. I haven't actually had anyone admit to me that they do recreational drugs, but I'm absolutely convinced some do, and certainly there's research to show this is true. And what I was recognising was those guys particularly who had played a lot of sports when they were younger, particularly rugby, they missed the sportiness of it, but they also missed the camaraderie and the team. You know, bonding. And what I tried to do with them was to get them to think back to, okay, when you were in that rugby team or that football team or that, you know, basketball team, whatever it was, what was so good about that? And what's missing from your own team in the business?
Interesting.
And then that started to get them to think about things like, well, you know, we would train together, we would have periods of playing together, we would have periods of you know, really competing together. So that combined with my own kind of personal journey made me think, right, okay, you know, I really could start to do something more holistic. And I was incredibly inspired by a young man over here who was actually my personal trainer, who is still now one of my very dear friends. Very young Polish guy. He was 23 when I met him. And I remember sitting in the gym, and I was doing, I'd had an ice skating incident, and I'd had to have an operation on my knee. Yes, I do tend to do crazy stuff. And yeah, so there I was kind of on the leg curl machine doing a one-legged exercise that another trainer in the UK had given me. This was when we were in Poland in 2009. And he walked over and started chatting away to me in Polish. I said, I'm terribly sorry. I said, but I don't speak Polish. I've just moved here from England. And he said, oh, brilliant. He said, I've just moved back from the US myself. I really want to practice my English. And boom, that was it. We
started chatting. Wow.
And he said, the reason that I yeah, synchronicity, you see. This is always about the whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be another one of my themes in a minute, but and so he was asking me why was I doing this one-legged thing, and so we got chatting. And anyway, he ended up training both my husband and myself.
Wow.
And such a superpower. His attitude, really. More, I mean, he had good knowledge, even though he was quite inexperienced, you know, kind of age-wise. But he's got a natural talent for proprioception, where your body is in space, how to teach different things in different ways. He's very patient. I thought, you know, there's something about this personal training log that I think I could kind of build in. And what I recognised, you know, when he would chat to me about what his clients were talking to him about, people wanted someone to talk to while they were training.
Yeah,
they wanted to not even necessarily get any advice, but you have someone listen to them. And he said, you know, people tell me all kinds of stuff. And I thought, you know, there really is a nice synergy. So it was just, you know, I got lots of messages around that. So I went off, got myself trained as a personal trainer and a gym instructor. I did working some certification with special populations, so people with diabetes, heart condition, asthma, you know, those kind of more specialist areas, because I was recognising a lot of the people in the business that I was working with were, you know, probably on the borderline diabetes, high stress levels. Some people had anxiety, and you have to be very careful how you train people with anxiety, because you need to manage their heart rate and look at their blood pressure and all that kind of thing. So that was that. And then I started to realise that it's not just the exercise piece, it's also the food and nutrition. And so I started learning more about food, trying to, and one of my issues around my weight was using food as an emotional support as opposed to using food for fuel.
That's such a big issue, isn't it? And particularly amongst women, I think, possibly more, is the emotional eating bit.
Huge. Yeah. And also the emotional non-eating.
Yes, of course. Yeah, using it as a weapon against yourself sometimes.
Well, indeed.
Yeah.
And you know, so trying to reframe myself. And in fact, I went and had some hypnotherapy with a really inspiring woman close to where my parents live in Essex. And I noticed actually recently she's changed what she does. She's now doing some sports psychology stuff, which I think is really right up her street, which is really interesting. And anyway, so I went and saw her for a few sessions and did some hypnotherapy. And if, and you know, anyone out there going, what's that? Well, you know, you have to be open to it. It's not going to work for everybody. But I was at a point where I'd hit a real plateau. I couldn't lose anymore. It didn't matter what I did with the training or the food. So there was obviously something psychological that was holding me back. Hypnotherapy worked for me.
Okay.
Other stuff might work for other people. So, you know, but it's just, you've got to be open. And I think one of the big things I would say to people is, you know, be open and be very aware why someone's walking up to you and talking to you. It may not be a threatening thing. It may not be a negative thing. It may be someone's got a gift for you. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine at the weekend, And she was talking about, you know, that there was somebody that was no longer a friend of hers in life, and et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, look, my big belief is reason, season, lifetime. You know, people come into your life either for a reason, maybe to help you find a solution to something, to give you some support around something, I don't know, whatever. They may come for a season. So it could be a period of time in your life when you're a teenager, when you're a younger person, when you're an older person, who knows? And they could truly be a lifetime soul partner, or, you know, soul person. They don't even have to be a partner. So I think if people could be a bit more open to the synchronicity, like, you know, you said, oh, wow, isn't that amazing? That guy came up to me in the gym. Absolutely it was. And isn't it amazing? Another synchronicity thing. I'm here now in Poland. And about 7 years ago now, I was at the airport flying back to the UK because I didn't live here full time. I was part time here and part time in England when my husband was here. And I saw this lady waiting in the security line at the airport, and it wasn't very busy. And I said to her, wow, I love your jacket. And it was this amazing kind of furry black short bomber jacket thing. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't fur, it was like sort of loose strands.
Yeah.
Very difficult to describe. And underneath it, it was red. And she said, oh, and she turned around, and typically, she was Polish, but she typically said, oh, this thing, she said, oh, I got it in the sale. And so we were laughing about, oh, you know, people can't take a compliment. And I said to her, actually, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of one of those monkeys' backsides with the big red, you know. And she said, oh, my God, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but it was just, I don't know why I said it. It's just what it reminded me of. I thought, how insulting. And, but, you know, so we then sat, we had coffee at the airport, we changed our seats on the plane, sat together on the plane, and we've been friends ever since.
Oh, my gosh.
And what's even more lovely about that is that the company that she works for is a coaching and training company, and I now do regular work here in Poland with them.
Wow.
You know, so you just don't know how being nice to someone, smiling to someone, giving someone a compliment can really make a difference in your life. And, you know, with the work that I'm doing with them, it's brilliant because I'm now able to give them different opportunities with international clients because they've got a native speaker, which is a huge thing over here. If you're a native speaker, you're very desirable. Mm. Doesn't matter if you don't know anything, but if you're a native speaker, I'm joking, but fortunately I know stuff as well as being a native speaker. So it's just a really, you just have to be open, Katie. You have to really just look at the opportunities and synchronicity and go, wow. So I don't know, that was a long answer to a very short question.
I remember I was in India last year, and I was with a corporate company, and I was being grilled by the learning and development director, and he finished off by saying, can I ask you a personal question? I said, yeah, you can ask. I'm not going to guarantee I'm going to answer you. You can ask. He said, what are the three things that you have learned doing the work that you do? And I thought, what a great question. You are one smart cookie. That's a really good question. And I said, well, one thing, I don't ask my clients to do anything that I haven't done myself. And it's about, you know, you talking about you having lived your journey, so you understand when people are struggling, and you know how great they feel when they're having a success. And I said, but I live my life like a AAA battery. I stay alert, awake, and aware. And it's taking positive action, but letting go of the outcome, for me, is the trick to how I live my life. So, you know, you took positive action in the airport by complimenting somebody on her jacket, but you let go of the outcome. And I think if we can get that honed down, the universe and life offers the most amazing opportunities, which we can choose to do something with, or we can choose to let go. But if we're asleep, we don't even recognize that it's an opportunity.
Well, exactly. And you know, there are a lot of people that are not only asleep, I think they're half dead, to be honest with you. You know, no, I don't mean that in a rude way. You know, God, what are you getting up in the morning for, you know?
Yeah.
And how do you get up in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
And very bizarrely, and I think one of the other things that is increasingly apparent to me is the huge, huge connection between emotion and physicality. And you know, I got quite involved personally in terms of my own research and sort of exploration long time ago now, 10-15 years ago maybe, with Louise L. Hay.
Yes, yes.
And amazing. I mean, you you know her, obviously. Yes. I don't know how many people in the audience will, but, you know, her book, You Can Heal Your Life.
Yeah.
And that absolute link between each part of the body and the emotional issues that are created in that part of the body, you know, if we don't address stuff, and the dis-ease. And I think what I love about her is that, you know, the fact that she actually calls it dis-ease as opposed to disease.
Yeah.
And it was brought home to me again last week. I was on a snowboarding holiday in a chalet in Morzine in France, and there was a woman doctor, and we were chatting about illness. As a genetic, she works in the NHS, and she was kind of talking about, you know, some of the challenges, and we were talking about, you know, illness and the fact that some people actually like to be ill just to get attention.
Absolutely.
It's a way of getting seen.
Yeah.
And she said, and she's in Nottingham, it's quite a high, she's not in a particularly wealthy part of Nottingham either. And she said, we treat a lot of loneliness.
Oh, interesting.
And we treat a lot of old age isolation.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, it's not even, these people aren't sick. She said they've created something to allow themselves to come in and see a doctor and get into hospital, she said, but they're not sick. She said, and that's what we're treating. We're treating loneliness, we're treating old age isolation. I thought, my God, we're in the 21st century and people are still alone. And, you know, it's really sad. And, like, you know, one of my desires, I suppose, for people in business is to stop making bloody money and start making a difference. And, you know, why are they sitting there collecting, whatever you want to say, all of this profit, which is imaginary money anyway, because it's all just numbers on a computer. For what? You know, what are they actually doing with that? What good are they actually doing in the world? Are they creating any kind of community? Are they looking at how they're supporting the area in which they're working? You know, and there's a lot of cynicism around corporate social responsibility, and as usual, a really well-intentioned thing like trying to get companies to actually give back to the community has turned into yet another measured tick box, let's make sure it's on the annual report and let's pretend we're doing something, as opposed to having a genuinely heartfelt thing around, wow, as a business, what is the impact we're making on our community from a positive point of view?
It's interesting. A lot of companies do a lot of really good stuff, but of course when you have a huge company, not every person within that organisation is going to have the same mindset. So it might be led by a very good CEO, but if everybody doesn't have the buy-in to that, that's when you get the cynicism. I don't have a problem with people earning a lot of money. What I do have a problem is what they choose to do with it. So, you know, money is just an energy. Yeah. It's not good or bad. It's just an energy. It's what the person who owns it chooses to do with it.
Exactly. And it's less about the individuals and more about the corporate. You know, so let's be very clear. What people earn is up to them, whatever they earn. I think, you know, if you've worked hard and you've studied and you've, you know, done all the right stuff, you know, you deserve to earn money. That's not the issue here. The issue for me is the corporate approach to, and all right, the corporate is still the people, but what I mean is this kind of focus on pleasing the shareholder in the city, you know, as opposed to what can we do? So if you look back... You know, as you know, I used to work for Ford Motor Company. If you look at what Henry Ford did back in the early 19th century, early 20th century, 1900, whatever it was, he built Dagenham plant. He built houses. He built schools. He built a whole big community for his employees to enable them to have a life that, okay, ultimately meant they would come to work and be healthy and all the rest of it. But, you know, he recognised the needs of the employees. Likewise, Mr. Cadbury, Birmingham, did exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and there were lots of other, I'm sure, examples that, sorry, aren't in the top of my mind right now. But what do we ever do with that now? Anything like that? No, I don't know. Anything.
There are a few companies in India who do that, interestingly, but I can't immediately bring to mind any companies in the UK, I have to be honest.
Well, and even in Europe, you know, coming around Europe, I don't see it, either, you know. And I don't know, there's, you know, business has kind of lost, there's no heart in a lot of these businesses now. It's all just purely you show up and you do your stuff and you go home again. And I think it's soul-destroying in a way because... Mm. You've got all these amazing people, all this talented energy, all this creativity and desire to do stuff. and they get shoehorned into these little boxes of, you know, rules and job descriptions. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about kind of what have been some of my success things in theory today. One of the things that I used to do when I was in corporate was I'd get a job, but the job description to me was irrelevant. What I would do is make that job play to the strengths that I had, do the stuff that I loved, and deliver the results that way. And nobody ever questioned me. Nobody ever said, that's not in your job description. No. So I'm the European training manager for marketing and sales. And what it says on my job description is that. But what I actually do is, you know, bring people together, create, you know, really shared learning experiences, encourage sharing of information, you know, create new ideas. You know, I don't, you know, deliver X number of training days every year. That's not what I do. I don't manage an agency with a £1 million budget. Yes, okay, I can do that, but that's not, at the end of the day, what I'm here for. So, you know, another story, which unfortunately the guy now I think is dead, but I worked for an amazing American man while I was in export operations at Ford, which was a real, oh my God, you went there if, you know, you kind of had nothing else to do, basically. And they tried to rejuvenate it, and they brought in a whole load of young talent. Sorry, I'm chuckling because it's funny to think that I was young talent. Anyway, ha ha. So we're all in there, and we're all trying to change it, and there's all these old dinosaurs in there. Anyway, they brought in this amazing guy called Jim Miller, and he'd been an American footballer, actually. Very handsome guy, and knew it. But real dynamic. And I remember he would walk, if he was in, because he used to travel a lot, because export operations was every other market that nobody wanted, basically. And so we had weird and wonderful places like, you know, North Africa and, you know, the Philippines, and before it was part of Asia. And I don't know, like Slovenia and Slovakia before they were part of the European organisation. And Malta and Iceland. And, you know, so it was a real hodgepodge. So he was always travelling. But he would, without fail, if he was in the office, he would come down, he would say good morning to everybody, he would shake their hand, he would ask them how they are. He would have he had an amazing admin person, but he started the process of saying, right, you tell me when it's someone's birthday, you tell me when it's somebody's anniversary with the company, I want to know, because then he would either call them or come and see them if he was in the office and wish them happy birthday or happy anniversary with the company. And if it was a big one, he would bring some kind of gift, like a 10-year thing or what have you. So he was so inspiring. And it's that kind of leadership now I think is missing. I see a lot of leaders who sit upstairs, they sit behind their closed doors. They're almost terrified to come out and talk to the people, and I don't know why. You know, and it's really sad. But one of the things that I remember I did, and I think this is where sometimes working in corporate, you can get away with these things if you show enough initiative. He announced one day that he was really disappointed that we as an organisation were not serving our customers particularly well in our markets, that we were sort of using them as a dumping ground for our old products rather than trying to create new market and opportunities and you know, really serve the clients well. And he was going to appoint a customer satisfaction manager. So my ears pricked up, because at that time I was in the worst job in the world. I hated it, except that it did introduce me to Poland, which is the one saving grace in that job. Wow. Yeah, so we kind of come to the pattern, yeah. And I was the fleet and government sales manager for Poland and the Czech Republic. And I was spending 1 week in Warsaw, 1 week in Prague, 1 week in Essex, 1 week in Warsaw, 1 week in Prague, 1 week in Essex. It was exhausting. It was frustrating because the pricing people didn't trust us to do any kind of proper selling. And the way that they created prices was crazy, and the people were just intransigent dinosaurs. So I was very unhappy in that role. And anyway, so when I heard that he was going to create this customer satisfaction role, I said to him, Jim, I want that job. And he said, no, sorry, Sean, you've only been here a year, or not even been here a year, you've been here. No, I had. I think, yeah, I've been here a year and 15 months or something. I've been there 15 months. And he said, you know, you have to be 2 years in position is the rule. You have to be 2 years in position. I said, look, you're not getting the best out of me because I hate this job. I hate pricing. You know, I hate the finance manager. Da, 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 da. You know, you're not getting the best out of me, and you're wasting my energy. And I want to do this customer satisfaction job because you'll get something out of me. No, no, no. So I sat until I think 1 o'clock in the morning in the office that night. I wrote the strategy. I wrote the job description. I wrote what I'd do in the first 90 days and what we needed to do to achieve customer satisfaction in the region. And I posted it under his door. And I went into the office at 6 the next morning because I knew he got in at 6:30. And at 6:31, my phone rang. We used to have those phones where people's names came up, and it came up Jay Miller. Uh-oh. And I picked the phone. I said, "Good morning, Jimmy." He said, "Get down to my office." I was like, "Uh-oh, I think I might have overstepped the mark here a little bit, but hey." And I walked in, and he had a face like thunder, and he said, "What the F is this?" I said, "It's the job description, it's the strategy, it's what I do in the first 90 days. He said, "Yes, I know that, but I told you you can't do it for it." I said, "Good, look, Jim, tell me, should I or should I not go for that job based on what you've read?" He said, "I haven't read it yet." I said, "So read it and call me and tell me," and walked away. Bear in mind, I'm like 16 grades lower than this man, whatever. No, we're not quite that many, but you know, I was only a junior manager at that point. And he's a vice president. So anyway, so about an hour later, he calls me. He says, "Right, okay, come down." He said, "Okay." He said, "Look, I will let you go for the interview because it's internal in this department." So I went for the interview, and the poor manager who was interviewing, I was just, you know, very quiet, introverted, after sales man, because for some reason customer satisfaction sat in after sales. And he was obviously kind of a little bit overwhelmed. I mean, he knew me because we worked in the same department, but he didn't know me that well. So anyway, had the interview, blah, blah, blah. Didn't hear anything for a couple of days. And then Derek came down. He said, "Could you come down to my office?" So I said, "Yeah, no problem." He said, "I want to do a second interview with you." I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "But I want the European customer satisfaction manager down here as well, or director, actually." And it was a guy I knew, Jeff. And so I sat down, and they said, "Sean, we've got a question for you." I said, "What's that?" They said, "Well, Jeff said," he said, "can I use this job description for all my customer satisfaction managers across Europe?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" He said, "Well, because it's really good. We haven't got one." "And this strategy thing," he said, "can we use that?" Customer satisfaction managers. I was like, "Don't tell me you don't have one of those." I said, "Well, I kind of do." He said, "But this is much better than what I've got." So I got the job, as you can tell. And what was lovely, though, of course, again, it meant that I had a lot of kudos with the European people. So I got quite a lot of budget from Europe that probably the others didn't get. And it also meant that I got to speak at different things and got a bit of exposure to senior management and different stuff. So again, you know, be prepared to take a risk. And it was a great job, and I got to know even more of the markets, even more of the people. And so what I tended to do was to ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Yes, that's a very good strategy in life. Just do it anyway and say, "Well, you know, sorry."
Particularly in an organisation that's very slow to make decisions,
yeah,
and you know that frankly bureaucracy rules okay. It's like, you know, show them that it can be done, as opposed to sitting there saying, "I don't know how to do it." You know,
yeah.
So rebellious as I am, you know, I used to get results. So forgiveness, not permission, was always my big thing. But anyway, but Jim was lovely.
Do you still live like that? Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
And why would I change?
Absolutely no reason at all, but people do.
You've got a strategy that works. Still to keep revisiting it. It's still working. Stick to it. Come on.
But a lot of people do. So, you know, sometimes I say, "Oh, yeah, well, that's a bravado of being young. I couldn't do that now." So actually not everybody sticks with it. But, yeah, good for you.
Do with it. Goodness me. Attitude of mind.
So tell us a bit more about Poland. Did we say you're a native speaker now?
No, I'm certainly not a native speaker.
You said that's what you were.
That's about it. You know, apparently the 15 words that I have, I can pronounce beautifully.
So you don't speak Polish?
No, I would not claim to speak Polish. I would claim to be able to point at things and get what I need.
So how? What's it like?
To people when I meet them and tell them how nice it is to meet them, and then switch to English. But, I have spent a fortune on Polish lessons, and I have a wonderful friend, Monika, who started off being my Polish teacher, who is now just my friend because she's, you know, I gave up really basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's an extraordinarily hard language. So tell you about Poland. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I first came here in 94, and it was very, very early days after
the
war had come down. My recollection of, in fact, I found a postcard the other day that I sent to my now ex-husband from Warsaw when I was first here. And it said, "Hello, darling, how are you? Greetings from the ugliest city in the world." Oh. That was rather an ironic kind of turnaround. But anyway, and because at that time it was incredibly dark.
Yeah.
They still had almost, I think, you know, those sort of sodium orange lights. So that, and there was no real hoardings. And I remember distinctly all of the advertising was cigarette. There was Marlboro. Pretty much it was Marlboro everywhere. And that was pretty much all you saw was, like, you know, cigarette advertising. And it, I just fell in love with the place. I fell in love with the people. There was something inspiring about the potential here. I could feel the potential somehow. Mm-hmm. And when I used to come, and I remember I was, I tried to make a sale to, one of the rental companies. And I came out here with, a guy who was on secondment from pricing, which was very helpful actually, because he was a much older gentleman. And I remember we did the negotiation, I think it was for like 500 cars or something for 2 years, which is quite a lot in those days. For, and so we did the negotiation, we agreed the price, and because we pre-determined it all with finance and I had the finance guy with me, it was all okay, so we could do the deal. And I remember the man saying to me, "And what's your room number at the Marriott?"
Oh.
And I looked at him and I said, "I'm sorry." He said, "What's your room number at the Marriott?" And I said, "Why is that relevant?" He said, "So we can seal the deal."
Oh, my Lord.
And I said, "I think you've got the wrong end of the stick here. It doesn't work like that in Ford Motor Company." So I just kind of walked out. And the finance man was just like, "Oh, goodness." He was retired. So he was probably in his late 70s. He walked out and he said, "I think that man just propositioned you." I said, "Yes, Mike, that man did just proposition me." And he was like, "Oh, my goodness. Oh, that didn't used to happen in my time. That never happened to you, let's face it."
Hilarious.
Very funny. Very funny. Anyway, so, but yes, so that's one of my little Polish stories. But then I got to, you know, I went down to Kraków. I went to, you know, flew a few other places. And I just thought, wow, you know, it's such an amazing, there's a lot of history here. And there's a lot of history here that people need to understand that we have influenced as a country.
Okay.
It's not positive.
Yes, yes.
And we sold the poles down the line, really, after the Second World War. And my view of Mr. Churchill changed very much when I moved here.
Interesting.
Wow. Not good what we did to them, and that as a consequence of our actions is why they ended up being communist ruled for such a long time.
Goodness me.
And it pretty much destroyed the country, and it's they've done really well to recover what they've recovered so quickly. And that's what I mean about potential. And you know, I love the Polish people. They are so creative. They can fix anything, yeah? They don't chuck stuff out or they don't buy new stuff. They fix stuff, which I love. Incredibly, particularly to foreigners. So I think I maybe have a bit of a bias because when I talk to people about my experience and they're natives, they go, "No, we don't treat each other like that." But certainly as a foreigner, I am always treated with the utmost of generosity, respect, support, warmth. You know, I have many, many friends here, and I mean friends, not just people that I know. It's you know, the lifestyle, they love the outdoors. I mean, we were laughing at the weekend because I went out for a walk with my friend, and you know, the forest was just alive with people, you know. And as soon as the sun comes out, as soon as winter's gone, everyone's outside biking, rollerblading, skateboarding, running, you know, aliveness. It's really great, and they really go outside and they make the most of it. And I think that's because it's quite a long, dark winter. It's not been a vicious winter for many years now. I mean, it used to get down to like minus 40 and be snow for months on end, and we don't get that now. But it's still cold. I mean, it can get very cold here. It can get down to the minus 20s, you know, and the wind can be cold. But you get beautiful summers. It's, you know, up to 40 degrees centigrade here sometimes in the summer. And what's nice here is it's dry.
Yeah.
So it's not that humid, horrible closeness that you get in the UK. You get this real nice dryness. And, you know, there's some beautiful parts. You know, Mazury is like their lake district. It's beautiful, it's green, you can sail, you can windsurf, you can just, you know, chill out. You can swim in the lakes up there, it's, you know, really beautiful. And then you've got the cities, you know, you've got Kraków, which is, we used to be the capital. until they moved it to Warsaw in the, I think it was the 16th century or something. And that's a very interesting city.
Krakow is lovely. I've been to Krakow. It's an incredibly beautiful city, isn't it?
It is.
Amazing.
And I think the disappointing thing for me is the fact that EasyJet fly there and make it so cheap for these Yorbo bloody, you know, stag nights and hen week. It's, I'm ashamed to be British, to be honest, when I see that. That would be the only downside. But Wrocław is also a beautiful city. It's quite Germanic because it used to be part of Germany. And you know, the other fascinating thing about this place, of course, is that the borders, if you look at how the borders of Poland have moved over the last, you know, 10 or 11 centuries, it's forever. It's like a jellyfish. It's forever moving east, west, north, south. Well, we can't move very far north because there's the sea. But that's the other thing. You know, they have the Baltic coast. They've got beautiful sandy beaches. Gdynia is a very interesting city. Gdansk is beautiful. Sopot is amazing for like a beach and parties. And, you know, it's, you know, you've got so many different, I've probably forgotten a whole load of, I've probably insulted half the Polish population by not mentioning their areas. But, you know, it is really a very interesting place. And I get disappointed when I hear people say, oh, why would I want to go to Poland? It's like, well, have you ever been? No. Have you seen it? No. Well, then why are you questioning why I would come here? you know, and you know, my parents laugh because when people say, oh, you know, where's Sean? And they say Poland, and people look and go, well, I thought all the Poles were over here. And Dad said, yeah, well, we're trying to address the balance.
Sending a few of us back over there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really funny, really funny.
So, how long have you been there now?
There are frustrating things here. You know, the bureaucracy here is still as it was in the communist times. You know, it's very difficult for them to get out of that mindset. Mm. But part of my reason for being here and coaching, particularly in business, is to get them to start thinking differently. And I'm also, I've had the great honour, actually, to coach three different leadership teams now of a youth organisation called AIESEC, A-I-E-S-E-C, for anyone who wants to look it up. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, amazing, gorgeous young people from all over the world who get together to, well, their purpose is peace and fulfillment of mankind's potential.
Wow. What's that? What are they called again?
AIESEC, A-I-E-S-E-C. It started originally by a French guy. And, you know, what the initial stands for is just some big long thing, but that doesn't matter. But yeah, peace and fulfillment of mankind's potential. So for me to be coaching those guys and helping them to run their youth organization in Poland, this year they've actually won the great honor of hosting the global conference, which will happen in August.
Gosh, how amazing.
Yeah, and they have young people coming in literally from all over the world, and they have something called the Global Village. So they have different little, it's like a marketplace of all, you know, representation from every country. And it's just absolutely fantastic. And what they do is they teach them leadership skills. They teach them, they do internships. They teach them, you know, they go out and they do stuff in schools and education to try and educate children about the world. And there are some phenomenal talent in that organisation.
You're an amazing organisation.
It's fantastic. And, you know, the average age, I think, is 22.
Right.
So for me, it's lovely. You just stay in with that crowd of energy and enthusiasm. And you know, and what I love is I learn as much from them as they do from me. And I think, again, that's about the openness. It's, you know, good grief. Just because you're 40, 50, 60 years old doesn't mean you know everything.
Oh, God, we never know anything.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who walk around and go, what can these young people teach me?
Well, yes, it's very true. Yeah.
And they can teach you an awful lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're really inspiring. So that's a real honour for me. And I'm hoping that I shall continue to do that this year. But we'll see. I don't know quite what's happening.
Amazing. So are you in Poland permanently now? I mean, what's
the future? Yes. I have my own apartment here.
Do you?
I live in the southern suburb. I'm on the very last southern stop of the metro line.
Right.
Right by the forest.
Lovely.
I have a 5 minutes walk from the forest. I am 20 minutes from the centre of Warsaw on the metro. I walk out of my apartment and I'm 2 minutes from the metro station, and I have a massive Tesco of all things at the end of my road.
No, not Tesco.
And I tell you what, it's like a Tesco from the 70s. So if anybody from Tesco is listening to this interview, get yourself over here and get into the 21st century, please.
Or Walmart.
Horrid. But anyway, they do actually have an organic line now, which is something, I suppose, but it's still really a dreadful thing. Anyway, whatever. And I've got little cafes, little bars. I've got a supermarket that's open till 11 o'clock around the corner. So, you know, it's convenient, but it's also beautiful and it's very quiet here. Very nice.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's the end of the tourist broadcast for Poland.
You've done a wonderful job. I'm going to send your interview to the Polish embassy.
My God, you're like some kind of travel agency.
No, it is a beautiful. I've only been once, but it is a stunningly beautiful country. I mean, for work, where are you going to expand next?
Well, you see, I don't plan, Katie.
It's quite often the best way.
I don't plan. And, you know, most people would say, oh, you should have a plan. Well, yeah, okay. I can have an idea. I can have a kind of direction of where I'd quite like it to be. But I think the thing is, if you're too rigid in your thinking about your planning, you miss the opportunities.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I would never have thought that I would now be a personal trainer as well as a coach, you know, 15 years ago. And who's to say what the hell I'll be in the next 15 years, yeah. You know? Hopefully not dead.
Let's hope not.
You know, I don't know. What's next? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not even sure if it's in Poland. I'm actually kind of at a bit of a crossroads again at the moment.
Okay.
So I'm taking a bit of a reflective... I'm not actually trying to make too many plans. What I've done this year, actually, is invested quite a lot in me in terms of my own downtime.
Right.
Because I was recognising that I hadn't really had a holiday for quite some time. So I took myself off to the States at the end of last year. Because I had some money from my divorce settlement, so I decided I'd spend that. And I did a bit of closure work around having been there. We left earlier than we thought. We didn't get to do all the things we wanted. I wanted to go and reconnect with some people. So that was really good, actually, to go and do that. It really gave me a reinforcement that it was the right thing to do to get out of corporate when I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely to go and see people and, you know, just reconnect with them. And there was one, you know, I love this, just a quick story about a young woman that I met while I was over in America. And I used to go every Saturday, I would go and I would have a pedicure, and every other week I would have my hair cut. That was kind of my little investment in myself, the only investment in myself. And at that point, I was 19 stone, I think.
Right.
So I was pretty big and got bigger in America, as you can imagine. So she was a young Russian woman. She was 18 when I met her. She'd come over with $200 in her pocket and she was working as a hairdresser.
Wow.
And I loved her. I could see she had so much more about her. She'd had a really tough experience in the States. She was, she got herself married to an older man and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, whatever. And she and I were friends for the whole 2 years that I was there. We used to go out as well as, you know, have hairdressers. So bearing in mind, I was, what was I then? 37, I think. And she was 18, so.
Wow.
And we just used to go. And anyway, whatever. So I've stayed in touch with her over the years, and I went to see her, and I stayed with her, and she, so listen to this, so she came to America with $200, she is now married to an amazing, lovely guy who's a banker. She's just had her first child, a little girl is now just over a year old. She is a fully qualified accountant.
Wow.
They have a 10-acre property by the lake up close to Ann Arbor, and they have 6 other rental properties.
Oh, my Lord. How amazing. What a story.
Isn't it?
Incredible.
And I, you know, when I met her, I mean, as you can imagine, when we saw each other, because we haven't seen each other for 15 years, we just had big hugs and, and it was just, and I just said to her when I left, I said, look at you, look at how, what you've done and what you've achieved. And she was in a really low place when I got there because she was really struggling with the new boss that she had. And we did quite a lot of coaching while I was staying with her for the week. And she said, you know, you've really made me realise what I've achieved, Sean. I'd kind of lost sight of that. You know, and I think sometimes you need to give people that gift. You need to say to them, you know, stop, look at what you've done, look at what you've achieved. And it's interesting because I'm coaching a lady here at the moment who's in a big corporate, I won't say who, and she's in a very specific specialist role, very talented woman, and again, new boss, new female boss, who's clearly more ambitious than she is emotionally intelligent. And this lady's gone through quite a terrible set of 6 months since this boss has been there, and I've started coaching her 6 weeks ago, and I met with her on Saturday for her coaching session, and she said, after our last conversation, I've sat and reflected on what I've achieved. And she said, and she listed all these things, and she said, I'm not bad, am I, really? I said, no, you're bad. You know, and it's just about helping people get that perspective back sometimes.
It is. I can't believe we've come to the end, Sian. I could talk to you for another 45 minutes.
Sorry, I probably talked way too much.
No. So I'm just going to have you back and do it again. I think that's the ability to press the pause button in life. It's a bit like walking up a mountain. If you only look upwards, you only see how far you have to go. If you stop, turn around and look at how far you've already climbed. And I think we all need to do that in life. So on that point, on that note, which is a wonderful way to end, I'm going to have to draw it to a close, unfortunately, but I'm going to have you back. So thank you very, very much. It's been
Thank you for inviting me for the
wonderful.
Interview. Lovely to talk to you.
It's been fantastic. So this has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.